Well, good evening and welcome to this live stream event on the 6th of October 2020. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Thank you very much for taking some time out on your Tuesday to spend time with me and voting to listen to me over Josh Frydenberg, who's delivering the budget speech at the moment. I'm sure his speech will be very, very interesting, but hopefully we'll get an even more interesting time here. Lots of information to share tonight, including my stress data and some other information as well. So without further ado, let me just slip into the normal mode here, which is that we start with just a few introductory remarks. I guess it's just worth going through the running order for those who may be here for the first time. If so, welcome. Nice to see some new names. Thanks very much for coming and joining the Tuesday night show. So we're going to start with this introduction, which I've done. Just touch on the house rules quickly, talk about our models, then just cover some key slides. There's a few things I want to go through, including the mortgage stress stuff. And then some questions and answers. The bulk of the show is obviously your questions answered, hopefully. So feel free to line those up. And the point there, of course, is that the whole thing probably will be an hour and a half or so, but then we'll sign off at the end. And just in terms of house rules, this isn't financial advice. I do need to say this every time, just so there's no confusion at all. It's based on my research, my analysis, but I'm not a financial advisor. I'm not able to consider your personal circumstances. So please don't take this as financial advice. It's very important that you don't. Secondly, please play nice in the chat room. No racial slurs. We'll be moderating, of course, as normal. And this is as at the 6th of October 2020. If you're watching this in replay, you'll know whether we were right or whether we were wrong. Please use that Walk the World to get my attention. There's always a lot of interesting conversations going on the chat. I can't necessarily follow them all, but if you make sure you use at Walk the World, you'll get my attention, and there's a very good chance then of getting your question answered. And I would also say that we've enabled Super Chat, which means that if you want to, firstly, you can make sure that your question goes to the top of the heap using Super Chat. And secondly, if you want to make a contribution to help us with what we do here and make a contribution to the ongoing running of DFA, we don't drive this for profit. We drive this just to inform and educate and help people make better decisions. But nevertheless, there's quite a lot of time and effort and some costs involved in creating it. So if you can support us, we'd really appreciate it. I'll talk later about the other ways that you can also support us. And I should also just say that for the first part of the show, I'm not going to be looking at the chat very much at the moment. So if there are questions that you'd like to ask me or particular postcodes you'd like me to go through, I do have the postcode engine online, then leave it for now while I go through this part of the presentation. And then a bit later, we'll start going back and I'll look through the history of the conversations on the chat. Now, just in terms of for those who may not know, we do a lot of research. We survey households, 52,000 households each year. That's 4,700 a month. We also capture information about SMEs, other sources. We suck in information from many different sources, including from APRA and the ABS and other sources. And so, for example, I've got all of the job keeper data down to a postcode level, which is now in the model. And from there, we actually throw information out into our industry reports and the blog and the YouTube channel, and of course our conversations one-on-one as well. The information comes in on Tuesday weekly, so we're always bang up to date with what's going on. Probably the most up-to-date survey running in Australia at the moment. And the other thing to say in terms of that is that the data can be sliced and diced lots of different ways. So we can look at it by household, we can look at it by location, we can look at it by segment, and lots of different things. It's a Rubik's Cube, as I've often said. That allows us to really get down into the detail. Detail is really important here because at a high level, you just see everything blurred, so you don't really understand what's going on. Go granular, and you can see the differences in home price movements. You can see the differences in terms of different segments and what they're doing, and different locations as well. Now, in terms of the model, it also drives into our scenarios, and our scenarios are a way of trying to explore how the future may be it positive or negative, and I've updated the scenario, so I'll go through that a little later when we have gone through some of the other slides. And I should also say that the core market model also powers our home price scenarios directly through mortgage stress, through the price trajectory and history, the buying and selling intentions from our surveys, the migration statistics, and broader economic and information from all the various elements, including wages and employment and CPI. And that goes into our core market model included across our scenarios. And we can look at it at a postcode level, roll it up to a region, state, and all Australian level, and also squirt the information out so that we can look at a specific postcode and apply some analysis as to where prices may go over the next 2 or 3 years. So let's just go firstly to the RBA. Notice no change today was their announcement. They did say a few things. Maintain current policy settings. Recovery is uneven. The containment of the virus is the critical element there. And the inflation rate will be very low and below central bank targets, mostly around the world and, of course, here in Australia too. Financial conditions remain accommodative. Yeah, we know that. Dollar remains about just above its peak. Of course, they'd love the dollar to go much lower, but at the moment, I think that's unlikely. That means that they don't get any benefit of importing inflation. And in fact, that could be deflationary overall. Now, we've experienced a sharp contraction in the June quarter, output falling by 7%. Recovery is now underway, but it's bumpy and uneven, and it'll be some time before the output level returns to its pre-2019 level. How many years? Not sure, but several, I think, is the short answer to that. They also said that the labour market is pretty subdued still. Unemployment rate will peak at a lower rate than expected. They were thinking 10%, maybe below that now. Even so, unemployment and underemployment will remain high for an extended period. Wage and inflation pressures remain very subdued. And they said that the bank will publish a full set of updated forecasts next month. That'll be worth waiting for, won't it? So that's pretty much what they said. And I suspect they probably will still take the rate down to 0.1% next month, but we'll see. Now, there's also worth talking about other information. I think one of the most critical things for people to understand is what was said in the Council of Financial Regulators quarterly minutes, which came out quite recently. And essentially buried in this was this very important point that essentially this is all about the issue of demand. So frankly, it's not about making more credit available. There is plenty of credit to be supplied. It's about demand. And essentially, particularly SMEs, demand is subdued and needs improved confidence in the health and economic outlook, which will be essential for addressing this. I think it's true also for many individuals too and households that actually you can get credit if you want it. But the question is, do you have the confidence so to do? And I also was interested to see that they referred to the fact that borrowers who cannot resume full repayments engage with their lender or seek other assistance, such as through the National Debt Helpline. So there you go, you got financial advice from the Council of Financial Regulators. Now, in terms of flogging a dead horse, this is a really interesting comment. Look at the credit aggregates to August 2020. This is the RBA data. And you can see there that total credit is bumping along the bottom at 2.2%. And yet, broad money is 11.5% higher than last year. This is the 12-month change. And so there's a really interesting question here about whether, in fact, putting more money in the system is having any impact at all. Because the fact of the matter is that you can create increased money supply, but unless it goes somewhere and does something, it doesn't actually have any impact. And, you know, at the moment, borrowing isn't particularly going up. So a lot of that money supply is not going to increase borrowing. In fact, it's going to repay debt. And whilst there is an argument to say that the 11.5% is one way to measure inflation, and therefore we were in a very inflation environment, that might be a bit too simplistic. And there might be other better ways of measuring inflation. And therefore, all I want to highlight here is the disconnect between credit and broad money. And we're seeing that, by the way, not just here, but also around the world too. Now, if we continue our meandering through our slides, the next one's really quite significant too. And that is that there was a podcast. It was actually on the Jolly Swagman podcast series with Joseph Noel Walker. I actually interviewed him for my channel. We called it Double Trouble Housing Bubble. I do recommend that show. It really is quite, I think, entertaining, but also quite concerning. But he also just put up a podcast with Ian Macfarlane, who was one of the former governors of the RBA. And basically, he is of the view that interest rates so close to zero really are doing very little at all. And in fact, frankly, it's probably not necessarily the right strategy. It's worth going through that in some detail because the latest round of cutting interest rates and quantitative easing, I myself don't think they've done any good, he said. So ex-RBA leader basically questioning the RBA strategy. Very interesting. I do recommend the overall podcast. It's long form, nearly a couple of hours, but worth it, I think. Now, the other point here is that the Australian basically came out with a bit of a summary before the budget, of course, tonight, saying that the debt burden could be $1.1 trillion, but that wasn't a major issue. You know, before the pandemic, Italy was 130% of GDP ratio. The US debt to GDP ratio is already high at 90, and the UK's is 85. And in our case, if we hit that sort of number, we would have a GDP ratio which is considerably lower and, in fact, would not be as high as it was directly after, for example, the Second World War. And I guess the point to make, though, is that the difference between the 50s and 60s is that whereas we had significant population growth previously, that might be more difficult now. And therefore, getting out of this debt hole, and by the way, some people are talking about it at $1.4 trillion, right? That's a lot of money. It's going to be a problem. Now, of course, the interest rates are very low, so therefore the cost of the debt is very low at the moment, which is good providing it stays low. But the question is, will it? And that's, of course, a very important question. Now, the Grattan Institute also has something to say on the tax cuts, and they've confirmed that the tax cuts will be backdated, the more recent ones that were passed. So effectively, we'll be getting more money, but there isn't a question as to whether the stage one, stage two and stage three will actually interact together. And there was a thing called the Low and Medium Income Tax Offset, the LMITO, which was due to be phased out before stage two came in. So the question is, what will happen now? But the point I'd want to make is that tax cuts tend to flow for those who pay the most tax and therefore don't necessarily contribute to creating more jobs. And this, again, is one of those examples where I think doctrinal approaches have perhaps overtaken sensible strategy, but we'll see, I guess. Now, the trade surplus came out today and narrowed. The surplus actually surprised on the downside at $2.6 billion as compared to $5 billion, and that's a narrowing from $4.7 billion for this July, and in fact, at $8.2 billion average for the 4 months, March to June. Imports rose, not fell, they went up 2%, and that was actually a surprise. Exports were a little softer, down 4.2 compared with 2.7, and imports were impacted by supply disruptions earlier in the year and weaker demand in Australia. And July saw a bit of a catch-up, but that's been extended through August. And on the export side, gold was the big mover, jumping $1.3 billion in July to a historic high, then falling by $2.2 billion in August, more than fully accounting for the $1.4 billion decline in total exports in the month. So that doesn't necessarily bode well for our GDP ahead. By the way, superannuation withdrawals continued slow. So the total value of payments paid out last week was $267 million, with $33.8 billion paid since inception. So you can see that big boost was coming to an end. And that's pretty important to understand because that actually, of all the stimulus packages that were thrown at the virus impact, this was the biggest. And it's also worth talking about the Roy Morgan unemployment rate, which came in at 12.9% for September compared with the ABS August data at 6.8%. Now, they calculate differently, but basically their point is the workforce is down. There are fewer Australians employed. There are fewer Australians looking for work. And it's also worth making the point that they do make some different assessments in terms of the rates compared with other methods, particularly the ABS method, but it's probably a more accurate measure of the true rate of unemployment at the moment. And of course, that's very concerning and very high. And it's down a little bit, but actually, the Roy Morgan unemployment and underemployment is still extremely high at 22.3. That's more than one-fifth of the working population. Consumer confidence was up just a little bit, according to Roy Morgan, but is still in negative territory, well down from where we were previously. And business confidence was also down. That was the NAB one down there on the bottom left-hand side, and also the Roy Morgan. They made the point that confidence was up just very slightly, but is still 25 points lower than it was in September 2019. And there are some various movements in different industries, so there are some positives and some negatives. But retail, of course, is very significantly dented, as is finance insurance. So that's another indication of businesses unlikely to borrow anytime soon. And jobs ads are still down. They're down 21% on the February level, according to the ANZ Jobs. Now, the week-on-week gain that's there, it does register, but they're still way down from where they were, which doesn't bode well. And interestingly, SQM came out and said that the residential listings decreased in September by 1.2%. Pretty much all of the other indices reported falls in some areas. Interestingly, the year-on-year listings decreased in Darwin, Hobart. However, Sydney recorded a large 9.2% increase. Melbourne's decrease was smaller at 0.2%, and all other capital cities recorded declines over the 12 months. So we are seeing some significant information here about less listings being available. And that's a little bit contrary to what we expected to see, because we did expect a lot of people to begin to think about listing. But my surveys now suggest that some of that listing will actually happen probably after the Christmas and New Year break, when people are clearer about what's going on. And by the way, the banks are still re-extending their principal interest loan holiday repayments, which means basically that people can have a little bit more wriggle room before they have to come to terms with their mortgages and what to do about it. So that's probably one reason why listings are going to remain low, but I still think that later they will rise again. There are just too many people standing too close to the wind. Now, just remind you, this is the picture from UBS before the budget. And we got more than 20% of GDP in the third quarter by way of stimulus. It dropped to 7.5. It's dropping again. So the interesting question will be, how much of this gap will be filled by the budget? And the critical point there is, of course, a lot of the infrastructure investment will take a long time to come through. So it's not immediate. It will actually take some time to flow. Now, some of the jobs initiatives may have an impact in the short term, but I still think we're going to end up with a very significant crunch in terms of the degree of stimulus in the economy, which doesn't bode well for long-term unemployment. Now, let me turn to mortgage stress briefly. And the data shows that, in fact, this month to the end of September, the overall stress level, and remember I'm measuring stress in cash flow terms, fell very slightly. It was just over 40% last month. It's now 39.5, very small fall, still way above 32.9% in February before the virus hit. And the other point to make there is that the Reserve Bank's household debt-to-income ratio dropped a little bit. It's still above 180, but it moved back towards 185. And that's partly because people are paying down debt. But the overall mortgage stress story is not particularly positive. If I then look at the more granular data, you can see here that by the states, mortgage stress and rental stress and financial stress are all registering here. And I should just explain that financial stress is reported basically as an aggregate of all the different types of stress, including investor stress. And so if we look at mortgage stress first, you can see that in the Northern Territories, in Tasmania, in Victoria, mortgage stress as a proportion of households that are borrowing is very, very high. It's about 40%. Victoria actually saw a slight improvement from 437,000 last month to 431,000. New South Wales, hardly any change. More than 38% of households in mortgage stress. In terms of rental stress, we also see significant issues there. 49.3% of households in New South Wales are in rental stress. And interestingly, we're seeing a large number of people who are not clear whether the rental holidays that they're just coming off mean that they've got to now pay their back rent or not. It seems to be a whole area of ambiguity, unfortunately. But nevertheless, if you take the 49.3%, that means we've got 737,000 people in New South Wales in rental stress. and that's a big number. Nationally, it's 35.5%. The South Australian story is much more positive, along with Tasmania. And if you look at investors, the percentage of investors who are in stress is sitting at around 25.5% across Australia. But in the ACT, interestingly, it's 35.6%. We've got lots of investors based in the ACT. This is not where their properties are, it's where they live, who are based in the ACT, who are struggling with returns on property investment. And that can be from no or limited rental income, trying to sell the property, or vacant properties. And finally, overall financial stress is actually highest in New South Wales overall. That's an aggregation of all these different elements. And it's also very high in the ACT. And the postcodes in South Australia and in the Northern Territory overall have the lower levels of financial stress. And 38% of households overall, that's 38% of the 9 million households, 9.7 million, are in financial flow difficulty. That's a big number. Now, we can also cut it by segment. And here again, it's quite interesting insofar that mortgage stress is residing among young growing families, the battling urban and the disadvantaged fringe. So those are the people on the edge of town. Many young growing families bought property very recently, first time buyers, of course. And the battling urban are those who are using a larger proportion of their income to be able to actually service their mortgages. It's also worth noting that the rental stress is highest amongst multicultural establishment for those people who come into the country relatively recently, and also more mature, stable families, as well as young affluents. So many young affluent people who are in rents are finding it quite tough at the moment. Their incomes have been considerably destroyed by the virus in particular. From an investment perspective, you can see that exclusive professionals and young affluents are at the top of the list in terms of the segments. That's because they are much more leveraged up. They have multiple investment properties. They have bigger loans. And it's interesting that those particular segments are generally seen by the banks as lower risk. Well, it looks to me as though those risks are just coming home to roost as structural unemployment continues to drive. And overall financial stress, you can see there, is quite widespread across our segments, from young affluents through to exclusive professionals, mature stable families, multicultural establishment, disadvantaged fringe, battling urban and young growing families. So this is a point about stress, is that it's touching many different households in many different locales in many different segments. Now, here's just a bit of information about the top postcodes in mortgage stress. Chipping Norton 2170, which includes Liverpool and all of those areas there, Warwick Farm, have more than 10,000 households in mortgage stress, which is 68.9% of households in mortgage stress. So that's the maximum. Then we go to Campbelltown and the area around there, Appin, places like that, and 9,742 in mortgage stress at 79%. Then we go to Victoria, to Fountain Gate, Narrawarren, Narrawarren South, with 9,474. That's postcode 3805, and that's 77.9%. Then we go to another Victorian postcode, Berwick and Harkaway, with 9,400, which is actually at 94.3%. That's a very, very high percentage. That's postcode 3806. Remember those postcodes, 3805, 3806? I'll show you why a bit later. And then we go across to Western Australia to places like Tapping and Wanneroo, and there we've got 9,300 or 60% in mortgage stress. And you can go down the list there. Toowoomba, Roxburgh Park, Pakenham, Sydenham in Victoria, Ballarat, Tamala Park, Clarkson in Western Australia, Cranbourne. You know, some of these names you'll find quite familiar because they keep popping up, moving up and down the list each time. But still, that's quite a significant list and a lot of people who are being impacted. We can then look at rental stress, and the most stressed postcode across Australia is in Victoria 3000. There we have 12,800 people in rental stress, which is 69% of the people there. Then we go to, again, the Liverpool area, Warwick Farm, Chipping Norton, 2170. So that's consistent with the mortgage stress. Then we go to the West Gosford area, so up the Central Coast, And interestingly, we've got significant rental stress issues there at 79%, more than 9,000. That's postcode 2250. And then we go to places like Grey Staines and Wentworthville and Westmead, with 70% of households, or 9,000, in difficulty. And then we go to Mount Druitt and Lethbridge Park in New South Wales at 2770. And then we go also again in New South Wales to this whole area here, which includes places like Sanctuary Point, St George's Basin, Sussex Inlet, all up in the all up in the Central Coast again at 66%. And in fact, you have to go down the list, because pretty much all of these are in New South Wales. Then we go over the way to Bundaberg, up in Queensland at 42% at 6,900. Back to Bondi in New South Wales, back to Parramatta, and then we go to Tamworth and places like that. So it shows you that there's quite an interesting set of dynamics here. And I will just highlight South Bank, which is 3006, is also on the list, 74% at 6,400. So you can see some of the common themes running through there. Some of those close into town, some of those further out. And then we can look at investors. So this is property investors. Remember, this is not where they have property, but where they live. And the largest number of stressed investors lives in Victoria, 3,000 in Melbourne. Then we go to the Northern Beaches, DY, Narrabeen, and North Coolcoole. DY. Then we come down to Wollongong. Then we go across to a whole bunch of areas like Bundaberg, Bundaberg East, North, South, Bundaberg West, and places like that, up in Queensland at 4670. And then we go across to places like Mandurah, Meadow Springs, Mandurah, of course, one of the places I keep coming back to, 6210. There are many property investors living in Mandurah who have significant issues with negative equity, nobody living in their investment properties, and is looking pretty worrisome over there. Then we go to Hornsby and Wentworthville again, Randwick and Clovelly. Interesting, that's a relatively upmarket part of the country, but nevertheless, still significant issues with rental income perhaps not being what it should be. That means that stressed investors are there. And Surrey Hills, and so it goes on. South Yarra, St Kilda, Southport, and you can see the list there. So that gives you a bit of a flavour. And then I'll just show you overall financial stress. This is the aggregate measures. So the postcode that wins in terms of total aggregate financial stress, this is measured in cash flow, of course, at 59.9% of households is, well, it's in the area around Liverpool and Liverpool South, 2170. Another New South Wales postcode at 2560, which includes Campbelltown, is next. And then we go to the Toowoomba area up in Queensland. So they're the three top ones. Then we go to Central Melbourne in 3,000, and then we move around to New South Wales, Victoria, and so it goes on. So that's the story of stress at the moment. Now, the other way I can show it is just to show you some maps. I'm not going to spend too much time on this, but this is just mapping stress by postcode. And essentially, we've shown this percentage of households this time. And you can see there that in Brisbane, there are some south of Brisbane heading down towards the Gold Coast and inland. So places all around here, there's Toowoomba over here, there's Ipswich over here as well. That's the sort of the story there. So you can see where the high stressed counts are by way of percentage of households. We can then look at in Sydney. And again, you can see there that this is considerable red, very dark red and orange, Campbelltown, up through Fairfield, up Blacktown, the Hills, Shar, all around there. A lot of significant pressure. Also, just a few closer into Sydney, but this is really now an issue that is really hitting Western Sydney very hard. We can go to Melbourne and see a somewhat similar story, with a lot of stress to the north and also to the east of Melbourne. Again, note some of the areas around here. I'll show you why in a second or two. And also we're seeing some over towards Geelong as well. So again, it's a patchwork quilt. There are some that are doing well, there are some doing less well. And basically those red is above 89% of households in mortgage stress, which is huge. Here's Hobart. Again, interesting story. There are some hot spots, other parts not doing too badly, but still some significant issues in Hobart, I'm afraid. And here's Adelaide, bit the same, north of Adelaide to the east of Adelaide, and a little bit sort of down south too. And then we come to Perth, and you can see there that north and south of Perth on the postal fringe, Mandurah is just off the page down the bottom there, there are considerable issues. Closer into Perth, not quite so many issues there, but as we'll see there, it doesn't tell you the whole story. Now, the reason I've gone through that is I want to show you these maps. This is actually Job Seeker by postcode based on the August 2020 data from the government. And what I've done here is I've just mapped the number of people on Job Seeker by postcode. And what's interesting is that you can see there's some commonality with some of the areas that we've talked about, with those outer western suburbs also now registering very high numbers of people on JobSeeker. And remember that JobSeeker is critical because it's being wound back at the moment. And you can also see there south of Sydney, some issues there as well on the inner west. Here is Brisbane, and in fact many areas of Brisbane, the light blue colour, not too bad. But if you go towards Ipswich, you can see the issues there. So there's a beginning to see a pattern, a correlation between JobSeeker and mortgage stress, and indeed Job Seeker and rental stress. Can look the same in Melbourne. Remember I talked about those areas east of Melbourne? Well, here they are showing up again. Some of those same postcodes with the very high levels of stress to the north of Melbourne and also to the west of Melbourne as well. So there is a very consistent pattern beginning to emerge where Job Seeker, high Job Seeker counts are also correlated with mortgage stress and rental stress. Same with Adelaide, north of Adelaide, in particular up around Salisbury. Salisbury been on the list for quite some time from a mortgage stress perspective. Well, they're also registering there in terms of Job Seeker. And if you go to Perth, interestingly there, you can see that north of Perth, up towards Vincent, there's a bit of hot spot there and around Stirling. Some also on the coast as well. And I'm doing some further analysis, but my conclusion is that there is a high correlation between mortgage stress and what we're seeing with regard to the Job Seeker situation. Remember, Job Seeker is being wound back. Not sure how far it'll be wound back, but that for me is a very concerning correlation. Okay, now let me just briefly touch about our scenarios. Just to remind you, our scenarios are a way of just talking about different futures and considering the consequence, not a forecast. It's just trying to help debate and to show the sensitivities. None of the scenarios may turn out to be right, and of course they're updated every month. We use the framework to drive our models, as I explained earlier on, and we're going to look actually at five potential outcomes with the latest data and results being reported. Now, this is looking forward from today. So to go about that, I'm just going to hit one slide. I have not built a whole series of slides on this because the RBA baseline is still pretty much the same. I'm waiting for more forecasts next month, and I still give it a 2.5% chance. In this scenario, house prices will be somewhere between 10% and 5% higher over the next 2 or 3 years, but I do believe that's too optimistic. My base case, which I've called COVID vaccination, is on the assumption, which is the assumption the budget has used, that there will be a vaccination program through the first part of next year. As a result of that, the virus will get under control. As a result of that, the economy will bounce back. And with all the stimulus and with everything else that's going on, in this scenario, it is now feasible that you could see house prices up by between 5 and, if max, 5%, or down 10%. So there is a path to higher home prices in this scenario, despite the fiscal quantitative easing and the negative rates, or close to negative rates. I've assumed the RBA will have taken rates down to 0.1% and it will stay there for some time. I've now given that a 25% probability in the model based on the data that I'm receiving. And that really is partly to do with the lending standards that were now wiped away, the stimulus that is being thrown directly at the banks through very low funded loans, the fact that banks will be able to lend a lot harder if they want to. And of course, the question is, will they? Goes back to my point about supply demand. If in fact the issue is not supply of credit, but demand, and demand remains low, this scenario is unlikely. So it does come back to confidence. My longer term crunch scenario, which is the one where I still have a 42.5% rating compared with 47% last time, is a scenario with prices sliding between 10 and 30% on average. Now, this is an average, units probably slide more than houses, and it will vary by postcode. That gives a high level of mortgage stress, a high level of unemployment, a very low interest rate for a long period of time, and more bank losses, because those losses will get accumulated as people come off their interest and principal repayment holidays without necessarily having a job. There is also the risk of what I call a multi-wave disruption now, because in a way we've had wave two in Victoria already. And here you will go zero or worse in terms of interest rates. The unemployment rate will probably be a lot higher because essentially the economy would still be very sick and therefore mortgage stress would be higher. And in that situation, home prices could drop 30 to 45%. Give that a 25% rating at the moment, no change from last month. And then there is the nuclear option, which is the uncontrolled pandemic, where effectively you take interest rates deeply negative, unemployment goes through the roof, mortgage stress falls over, etc. I'm going to give that a 5%. And my modelling basically knocks off the top one and the bottom one, and we look at these three mid scenarios, and they're the ones that drive my modelling. And for the purposes of all my modelling at the moment, when I talk about my base case, I'm talking about my longer term crunch scenario, which is at 42.5%. So there you go. That's pretty much where we are with regards to the scenarios. And hopefully that's given you a bit of a flavour of where my modelling has taken me. I remind you again, that modelling is based on all the inputs from all the surveys, from all the other analysis that I've done. And it's trying to look 24 to 36 months ahead. And my point there is a path potentially to higher home prices if certain things happen, particularly around the containment of the virus and particularly around the demand coming because households get more confident and decide to borrow more and business is the same. But there is also a very significant risk that because of the fact that this is now a longer term crunch, the confidence will remain low. You saw that in the earlier data. And therefore, it seems to me quite unlikely that maybe that will transpire, which is why the main scenario that I run with is my longer term crunch. I'll update these again next month and we'll see how these scenarios evolve. And with that, I should just mention our new postcode tool. This is the last thing I'm going to cover before I actually go to start the questions. And just to say that this is now the way that the tool looks. And let me just put that on full screen. There you go. So we now have a bit of a map. We have the core data and we have the price projections now reporting properly. And you can see there my best case, my mid case and my worst case. So for Victoria 3000 with 22,900 households, of which 3,000 are borrowing, 18,000 are renting, 14,000 properties for rent there, and there are nearly 8,000 property investors living in the area. Financial stress metric is 75%. Mild stress is only 5%. So the defaults, although it's 2% of those borrowing, is very low. But rental stress is at 69%, which is 12,800. And the investors are also, as we saw in my earlier analysis, very stressed. 75% of property investors living in the area are stressed. So it gives you a good flavour of how it works. Now, the exciting tool that we've added to it now is a comparison. So this is now the ability to be able to compare Victoria, which I've just gone through, with essentially another postcode. I've gone for New South Wales 2000, and there you can see that the financial stress metric is slightly lower at 71% for New South Wales 2000, 404 in stress, that's 23%, that's still low, but not as low as Victoria, 60% in rental stress compared with 69% in Victoria. Common themes there are a lot of students, a lot of part-time workers, a lot of low-paid workers, great difficulty with their rentals at the moment. And in terms of the investor stress, 77% of investors living in 2000 have issues, compared with 75% in Victoria. But what's interesting is if you look at the projections based on the base scenario, this is my longer term crunch scenario, you can see there that in 2000, we're looking for this trajectory, which is basically about 70% over 3 years fall on average, whereas in Victoria, it's at 22%. So there is a difference of performance between the two states. Okay, with that, let me put the main camera back on. And let me just go back and have a look and see what the questions are. I'm going to start from close to the top, see where we go from there. Okay. The budget was good for a laugh, says George. Yeah, that's probably about right. I haven't seen any great revelations so far, but we'll see, eh? The base should ask me, have I shown my 24 to 36 month projections? Well, I have now, so hopefully that's answered that question. What else? Okay. Just going down the list. Okay. What about 2022? 2022, all right, let me put 2022 in here. 2022. New South Wales, 2022, which is Queen's Park, Bondi Junction. Okay. And I've just left 2,000 in there to compare it, right? So there are 5,900 households in 2022, 1,400 borrowing, 3,400 renting, 2,600. Let's put that back up. There you go. Yep. 5,900 households, 1,400 borrowing, 3,400 renting, 2,600 properties for rent, and the financial stress metric is 46% compared with 71% in New South Wales 2000. There is no really visible mortgage stress, but there is risk of default. Now, risk of default comes, of course, more than from mortgage stress. So that's one of the reasons why that's there. A very, very significant but low number. Rental stress, 58% compared with 60%. So that's quite significant. And property investors, 57% of property investors in that postcode are in some dire stress compared with 77% in 2000. So there you go. Hopefully that one. Can we look at 3021? Sure we can. Why don't I just go back to the other one? Because I quite like that one. 3021. So what we'll be able to do in due course is to get this up online so that you can do the queries yourself. But we haven't quite ironed all the bugs out yet. So we're looking at places like St. Albans, King's Park, places like that. 19,700 households, 6,500 borrowing, 8,300 renting, 6,400 properties for rent, and 5,400 investors, 30% in financial stress. So that's relatively low, as I've shown you, relative to some of the others. There's 28% of households in mild mortgage stress. Risk of default's only 2%. Rental stress at 35%. And investor stress is at 23%. And this is with a profile. My midterm crunch comes in at 18% on average. That's obviously units and houses. If you take houses, the falls will be less, I think. So that's the way that works. So the overall financial stress metric is considerably lower than many other places in Victoria at the moment. All right, what else have we got? Let's have a look. George doesn't want any more postcodes. Sorry, George, you've been outvoted. Master Singleton said you forgot the ACT. I did. That's because the data is relatively patchy. If you're interested in ACT data, perhaps I'll do a separate show on the ACT. I'm actually looking at the ACT. It's really quite an interesting case study because there are a whole bunch of different things going on there. There are a lot of property investors who live there, but actually are in difficulty. And it's quite interesting trying to unpick that. So I may well do an ACT specific show like I did around Wollongong. And I've had quite a few requests, by the way, for other places where I can go into more detail. It's just a question of when I have time to do that. The fact of the matter is that you have to go granular to really understand what's going on, but you have to also avoid the obvious pit stops and difficulties with regard to the data when you go granular. Okay, what else have we got? A lot of conversations about recycling bins, which I'm not going to go close to. For 2134, that's interesting, 2134, okay, question there. So we're talking there about Burwood, and you're making the point that the demographics get better the further away you are from the station. That's probably true. Nevertheless, there's 75% financial stress metric, which is quite high, and you've got 80% of mortgage holders in mortgage stress, so that's going to be spilling over to quite a few households there. The rental stress is at 72% with 2,700, and the overall investor stress is 65%, so that's why the financial stress is so high. That looks like a postcode where there is considerable pressure on households, in my view. Let me just throw that up so you can see it. There you go. So that's the postcode, 2134, and that's the information there. 6,000, 1,200 borrowing, 3,800 renting, 2,900 properties for rent, 1,800 rental properties at 75% financial stress and 80% mortgage stress, 72% rental stress, 65% investor stress. Now, the reason that these metrics are so interesting is because they do directly correlate to what happens later. And these are the sorts of measurements that I saw in Mandurah, for example, some time ago. And so I'm not saying that Burwood's going to go the same way as Mandurah, but nevertheless, there are some considerable parallels between the metrics that we're seeing then and in other places, and we saw in Mandurah sometime previously, which is one of the reasons why I talk about Mandurah. Okay. Done 2134. Okay. Now, somebody asked me about 3195. Let me just do that while I remember. That was came up before I started. 3195. Okay. So that's Aspendale, Braeside, and a few other places, Parkdale, Waterways, in Victoria, obviously. 14,300 households, 7,163 borrowing, 4,600 renting, 3,500 properties for rent, and the number of investors, 4,700. Financial stress is only 29%. That's a good measure. That's low. The mortgage stress is very low. The rental stress is higher at 54%, that's above the national average, and the investor stress is 32%, which is still above the national average, but is still relatively low. So that looks like, to me, to be a postcode in, you know, not huge amounts of issue. But again, we've still got this view, because of the broader economic downturn in Victoria, of falls over the next 12 months, followed by not much the next couple of years. And if you take my positive view, you know, the fact is that there is a best case view of only 5% falls, and that's about it if you believe the economy is going to come booming back. And I will just make the point, in case somebody asks, that if I go to 7,000, which of course is Hobart, there you can see that the modelling is suggesting that the base case is talking about price growth about 4% over the next 12 months, then a fall. And the bullish case is actually looking for 12% growth in prices over the next 12 months before it fades away. Whereas if you take the worst case scenario, then it's no growth at all. So it's showing you, I think, how these models are sensitized for the different scenarios that we're dealing with. And it's worth reflecting on in Hobart, 23% of people in financial stress, only 70% in rental stress, and only 28% of investors are in difficulty. Now, if you go elsewhere around Hobart, get a very different story. Okay. What else have I got? Thank you very much to Ron, to Diddy Don't, to Beige Shirt, and Justin C. 2614. Right, 2614 is, sir. 614. ACT. There you go. So ACT, this is Macquarie, Page, Jameson Centre, Cook, places like that. And in that scenario, the 8,000 households, 3,000 borrowing and 3,000 renting, 2,400 properties for rent, number of property investors, 3,300, 41% in financial stress. So that's not as high as some, but higher than others. 31% in mortgage stress, 38% in rental stress, 37% of investors in difficulty. And here you can see the scenario in the base case, small fall, about 5%. And then another fall there, and a slightly bigger fall down to 13% over 3 years. On the other hand, if you're bullish about the economy, then it's a rise of 2.9, then 1.9, and then down 1.2. And of course, the worst case is considerably worse. So there you go. And I would like to just acknowledge the development team who've been working on this in their spare time, pretty much. This tool is coming together very well. We're looking to add more functionality to it quite soon, and that will be the point at which we will then make it more widely available. And as always, if you're not on the live stream tonight and you want a postcode, I can provide you a snapshot like I'm showing here of a particular postcode. All you need to do is send me an email or contact me via the DFA blog, links are below, and ask for a particular postcode, and I'll send it back to you. And I try to turn it around within 2 or 3 days. Sometimes I can't quite do that simply because there's just too much going on. Okay. What else have we got? I think somebody else asked for another one there. Okay, what else have we got? Like to know about Seaholm 3018. Sure. Easy. 3018. Okay, Seaholm and Altona, 5,900 households, 1,800 borrowing, 2,500 renting, 1,900 properties for rent, and 2,100 rental property owners. 46% in financial stress overall, of which 47% are in mortgage stress at 877, 1,076 in rental stress at 42%, and 38% of investors in investor stress. And there you can see that the best case is for a fall of around 7%, then a slight rise and then a slight fall again, or the worst case is considerably down to 33, but the base case is 15 by 19 by 21. So that's that one. Thanks, Nobby. Yeah, it's quite good, isn't it, this tool? I'm quite pleased with the way it's performing, and The situation is that we're building history as well, so we'll be able to show more information later. Now, somebody's asking about 3377. Who's that? David Camp. David, here's your postcode. We're looking here at Ararat, Crowlands, Great Western, Maroona, etc. 4,240. Those are the number of households. 1,408 borrowing, 1,700 renting, 1,300 for rent, and number of rental property owners, 748, 33% in financial stress, 42% in mortgage stress at 587, 33% in rental stress at 595, and 27% in investor stress. And here are the profiles. So basically a 6% fall best case, 5.9, 7, or my base case, 14.4, 18, and 19. Remember, again, units will fall more than houses generally. Okay, what have we got there? Christopher Reeves is saying 4030. Thank you, Christopher. There we go. Okay, now this is Queensland as a good example. So if you think that Windsor and Wooloowin are actually going to be subject to significant economic recovery, then your price range will be positive 4.6, 3.6, and then basically flat in year three. My main case is down 3.4, down 8.6, and down 13.1. And there are 7,000 households, 2,300 borrowing, 4,700 renting, 3,600 for rent, and the number of rental property investors, 2,000, 34% in financial stress overall, 56% of those are in mortgage stress, 1,346, 20% are in rental stress at 969, and 17% are property investors. So that's that profile. Thanks, Vanessa, appreciate that. Charlemagne, 3851. 3851, there you go. So we're looking at Paradise Beach, Sea Spray. There's some lovely names across Australia, aren't there? It's good stuff. Okay, 4,200 households, 898 borrowing, 2,700 renting, 2,000 properties for rent, 459 rental property owners, 29%, and 60% are in mortgage stress, 539, 21% are in rental stress at 563, and 28% are in investor stress. And you can see that the profile mid-case is down 14, 18, and 20, or if you take the best case, down 6, 6, and 7. Okay, Aussie, thank you for that. 4556. 4556, there you go. Oh, sorry, that's because I haven't typed it right. 4556. Too big on the trigger. There we go. Skippy Downs. In that area. Okay, so 17,400 households, 7,189 borrowing, 7,000 renting, 5,400 for rent. Numbers of rental property investors, 5,700, 26%. 23% in mortgage stress at 1,600, default rate at 3%. Rental stress at 20% at 1,401. And 27% of investors at 1,488. And the profile is positive 5, 4, and 0.8 in your best case scenario. My mid case, my most likely case, is down 2.1, down 7.2, and down 11.8. And of course, the worst case, more significantly serious. Okay. Real estate industry gaslighting buyers, says Avdad. Yeah, there's a lot of that going on. If you followed my conversation with Edwin yesterday, you'll know there that I was discussing about the issue of price disclosure and the lack of it, the fact that many people aren't getting a full picture of what's going on. And funnily enough, only prices that go up are being reported, whereas prices going down, the settlement information is being withheld. That is a serious issue. And of course, all the portals basically walk away from it, basically saying nothing to do with us. You know, it's not our issue at all. And, you know, we don't carry any responsibility for the information we put on the portals. I think that's a bit of a disaster, frankly, and many people don't realize that there is very little support for the information that's there, nor justification. And frankly, you need to be very cautious and careful about those data points. They are generically incorrect, inaccurate, and a bit of trying to get people to buy at any cost. That's my view, and unfortunately we're seeing more of it than ever before. So that's a message for anybody thinking of buying property at the moment. Do your own research. Don't rely on the property portals. They are inaccurate and not necessarily giving you the full balanced picture. Okay, 2795. See, I can do more postcodes when I can just put the number in without having to mess around. Okay, now this is a long list of places, including George's Plain, Hobbies Yard, The Rocks, Trunkey Creek, Wattle Flat. Oh, it's amazing, isn't it, some of those names. Anyway, around Bathurst, I think. So Bathurst would be the centre of gravity. 18,000 households, 6,700 borrowing, 8,000 renting, 6,200 properties for rent, 3,600 property owners, and 42% in financial stress. Mild stress, 2,600, 39%, 2% in default, 50% in rental stress at 4,000, and 26% of investors, which is 871. So you can see there that there's a little bit of stuff going on. Now, what I might just do is give you a little bit of a sense also of, there you go. So this is actually just a view of the studio and what I'm doing. So just to explain, obviously the main mic here, a couple of screens, a couple of computers, and a bit of lighting. So that's how I actually do this. The green screen, of course, is behind me. You can't see that. But I've had a few people ask about how I actually configure this. I've also got one bit of additional kit which I didn't have before, which you can see up here. This is actually the audio and the visual control, so I can keep the audio up to the right level and also to make sure that I've got the colours and everything working correctly. So that's how the gear works. I go back to my normal shot now. But I had a few people ask about show the studio, so there you go. That's for those who wanted to see the studio. All right, let's see what else we've got. Are you able to do 4305, says Jonathan? Yeah, of course I can. Oh dear, Bass and Pocket. You know, Bass and Pocket comes up quite often in my searches and surveys. I'm not sure why. 25,000 people, that's probably why. Quite a big population base. 9,300 borrowing, 12,900 renting, 9,600 properties for rent, number of rental property owners, 5,400, at 52% in financial stress. And within that, 5,300 mild mortgage stress, 58% of households, 2% in default. If you look at the renters, 6,430 at 50% and 27% of property investors. And the profiles, well, if you're positive about economics, up 2.3, up 1.3, down 2.8. If you take my base case, down 5.7, down 10.8 and down 15.4. So there you go. Okay. What else? 3803. Did I do that one? I'm not sure. I don't keep a list. 3803. Let's try. No, there we are. Hallam in Victoria. Okay, so there you can see that we've got 3,600 households, of which 1,800 are borrowing, 1,296 are renting, 990 for rent, and 1,095 investors. 67% in financial stress, 73% in mortgage stress at 1,300. 810 in rental stress at 62% and 36% in stressed investors. And you can see the profile there. Mid-case is down 18, 21 and 23.4. Okay, now Michael asked an interesting question. Let's just pick that one up. Thanks, Michael, for that question. So does realestate.com.au and others use listing prices for sales averages when agents don't disclose the sale prices? Well, yeah, that's pretty much right. So if you go and look at the portals where prices have actually been listed, that's what they show. Where they've been sold, they will often show the last advertised price rather than the settled price. Now, in theory, agents should be putting in the settled price into the portals and it should be flying through. But in many cases, for public consumption, it never gets in. And then the final part is that the settlement data flows through into the land registry, etc., etc., over a number of weeks and months when the property is settled. And that settlement data should be then flowing back into the portal to then essentially adjust the data. But it doesn't. Very often it doesn't. So we've got this sort of weird mismatch between what the real story is, which is all about settlement prices, and frankly, also auction prices, which are often not disclosed either. You see more and more where the price is not disclosed, which means that it's very hard to read what's going on. So the truth is, it's very difficult to know precisely where prices are. But guess what? When there are prices above the expected price, that's the ones that get written in all the portals. All those articles about, you know, well over the reserve, massive price gains. And then when you look carefully, you realize that, well, it's not the full story, partly because it's only telling a very small proportion of the transactions. And quite often, the base price that they start the conversation from isn't necessarily the full story either. I did a show about 2 months ago where I actually went through quite a few different properties and showed what the original listing price was and what the settlement price was subsequent. And quite interestingly, if you go back over history, quite often people are losing money on the way through, despite the fact that many people actually don't seem to want to admit that. So obviously the official story is market's booming, now's a great time to buy, prices are going to go up, it's perfect. The true story is rather different, I'm afraid. And there are some places where prices are definitely higher, but there are many where prices are definitely going lower and probably will stay lower for longer. Okay, 2567, Michael, you asked around as well. Let's try and do that. 2567. There we go. Let me put it back full screen so you can see it. Okay, 2567. Now, I want to try an experiment here. In theory, I don't know whether that makes it easier or difficult, more difficult. Hang on. Yeah, maybe it's easier. Okay, there we are. We've got a little magnifier that we've now got. So for those who said, I can't see the screen, maybe that's easier. 2567. So we're talking at Currans Hill, Harrington Park, Mount Annan, 12,300 households, of which 8,700 are borrowing, 3,200 are renting, 2,400 properties for rent, 2,699 rental property owners in the area, and 58% in financial stress, 62% borrowing mortgage stress, 5,401, only a level of default at 1%, that's very low, 52% of renters, and 8% of property investors. So that's the slight disadvantage with the magnifier, is that you don't quite get the whole thing without me scrolling. But there you go, that's a very minor thing. And you can see there that the price change is looking, best case, down 1%, 1%, and 3.1%. Mid case, down 9%, 13%, and 15%. So you pay as your money, you take your choice. And that's really a combination of the very low levels of default and the fact that the amount of stress is manageable for many people at the moment in that particular postcode. So that's the way it works. Andrew asked, can I look at 2422? Sure can. 2422. Okay. I'm going to take a little coffee while you're looking at that. Been talking a lot today. I was on the ABC Illawarra just beforehand talking about the budget. 2,700 households, 634 borrowing, 1,196 renting, 897 properties for rent, 870 rental property owners, and 37% in financial stress. So that financial stress number is quite low. 40% in mortgage stress at 254. Risk of defaults at 3%, a bit higher, but not too many. 50% of renters are in rental stress, and 26% of property investors have issues with their property. Okay, so that's that one. What can I do? Harvey Bay, says Matthew White. 4655, sure can. 4655, there you go. So Queensland is looking relatively positive in terms of the economy relative to other states, and that's partly because of the control of the virus and partly because the economics look a little easier in some regards. 28,362 households, of which 7,851 are borrowing, 12,721 are renting, 9,681 are properties for rent, and 11,381 rental property owners, 32%. Mild stress, 574. The severe stress, not showing at all. 7% in mortgage stress, very low. Default rates at 3%. 44% in rental stress, 5,602. So the rental stress thing's a big issue. 29% of investors are in some difficulty. So there you go. That's the story with that one. Okay, now Helsinki's asked. he said, or she said, I'm not sure which. Sorry, I'm a bit late to the party. Your thoughts on buying a home in the next 6 months? Currently happily renting. Okay, well, there's a few questions there. So the first is for owner occupation or for investment. I wouldn't be looking at property for investment at the moment. I think there are too many uncertainties, and my own view is property investors are going to continue to struggle for at least the next couple of years, probably for longer. For owner occupation, my perspective is this. Interest rates are going to be very low for a long period of time, and the mortgage rates, therefore, are going to be low, and therefore the repayments are relatively low. But the question is, do you want to try and pick the perfect time to buy, or are you happy to buy and possibly ride the markets down? So, you know, my own view is it's more likely that prices will fall rather than rise from this ahead. Not dramatically necessarily everywhere, but there's probably some risk. And the other side of it is, if you don't need to do anything, you've probably got more choice later, because I do believe that listings will be higher. I do believe that there will be more choice. And as a result of that, I tend to think, and this isn't financial advice, but my own sort of intuition is, just take it easy. Just, you know, keep an eye. But if you do see the perfect price, the perfect property at a really good price, it's not completely stupid to go and buy it for own occupation, providing you're going to hold it for relatively long term, that you're not over leveraged. In other words, that you've got some equity in the property so that you're putting some liquidity into it if prices do fall. and that you can get a really good mortgage rate. I'd also be a little bit cautious about some of those government incentive schemes, because they look superficially quite good, but what happens quite often is that the price of the property goes up by the additional incentives. We saw that in Western Australia when they introduced their 55,000 homeland package stimulus. Guess what? Prices of homeland packages went up by $55,000 on day one. So it was a zero-sum game. So those are just some of the things to consider. And my bottom line is this: I'm not a property bear, believe it or not. I'm a property realist. There are times when it's right to buy property. There are times when you don't necessarily try and pick the market perfectly. And I've always said that if you're a property buyer for owner occupation, it's more than just a pure financial calculation. It's also a question of lifestyle and a question of security and those things. And those things are worth something. But don't expect massive capital appreciation. We saw for the last 30 years capital appreciation running away way higher than it should, but the long-term trend is roughly inflation. And so my own view is inflation is probably what we're going to see at best over the next 5 to 10 years, not least because migration is going to be pretty low for a long period of time. We're going to see lots of property investors selling. We're going to see some demand from first-time buyers, but not massive demand. And therefore, the supply-demand disequilibrium that we've got will also put downward pressure on prices. And that's all in the modelling. So that's my perspective. So Jeff is asking, are you tracking vacant rental property in Melbourne? Most inner areas have hundreds of thousands of available rentals. Correct. So one of the reasons why I talk about the issues in Victoria 3000, let me just put that one back up again, because it's just such a iconic postcode. All right. So we've got 69% of renters. Let me just put this up for a second. 69% of renters in Victoria 3000 struggling. All right. And we've got 75% of investors struggling. Now, when you actually look at that, as I do in my data, and that's a big number, right? For more than 4,000 investors and more than 12,000 renters. That is because a lot of the students have gone away. A lot of the people who were previously living in these units and apartments are living now with family, moved away. And there's massive and masses and masses of available stuff. In some postcodes, not all of them, but in some postcodes, I'm seeing vacancy rates of 6, 7, 8, 10%. That overhang is huge. It's also still an area where they're building more. Even now, they're building more apartments. So we're seeing continued flood of new apartments competing with old apartments that are vacant. And guess what happens? People tend to prefer new rather than old. They pay more. So I'm afraid that this has got a long way to run. There is a very, very uncomfortable story here, particularly in the unit sector. The other point to make is, of course, quality of construction has been very bad. And we are seeing considerable numbers of people struggling with extra demands in terms of having to pay for repairs that should have been covered by the original builder, but the original builder has gone away. Or alternatively, the management, strata management company, is unable to deal with it. So these are big deals. I would be very, very cautious about buying any high-rise anywhere in close to the centre of Melbourne, or indeed Sydney at the moment. There are just too many risks. And I'm afraid that we're going to see more price compression over the next couple of years. That's one of the reasons why I keep talking about units dropping considerably more than houses. Generally, close into the centres of town, there is a limited supply of houses, and therefore they tend to maintain their value better. Units, on the other hand, are almost infinite in terms of supply. They're being churned out and they all look very much the same. I was doing some work, for example, for somebody today looking at Brunswick, and there in Victoria and Brunswick there are many, many properties in the same development, all now on the secondary market, all looking precisely the same. Very hard to see how they're going to be able to actually clear very effectively and at a reasonable price. So yeah, that's my take on that. Please do Maruduch Marud Movraduchiador. Yeah, abundance. If you tell me the postcode, I can. I don't have the ability to reverse look it up at the moment. That's perhaps something we can add later. But at the moment, I have to put the number in rather than the name in. Also, it's very long to type the name as well. But if you can look up the postcode, put it in, I'll try and do it for you. 2565. This is from Annette. Look it up. Okay, so this is Macquarie Links, Denham Court, Ingleburn. 7,136 households, of which 3,400 are borrowing, 2,800 are renting, 2,100 properties for rent, and 1,600 rental property owners. Numbers in financial stress, 52%. Mild mortgage stress, 1,643 at 48%. Risk of default, 1%. 1,713 rental stress at 60%, I should say, and 30% of stressed investors. So, yeah, not as bad as some. 52% is quite high, though. And here's the profile. Mid-case down 9.8, 14, and 16. Best case down 1.8, 1.8, and 3.9. Okay, let's have a look. Why rent when you can financially bankrupt yourself for a longer period, says Mr. Negative. Yeah. Well, yes, it's interesting. There is a really interesting debate about rent versus buy at the moment, right? Because rents are dropping. In some cases, rents are down 9 and 10% or more. Much more choice in terms of places to rent, much more flexibility. So the question is, why would you lock into property at the moment when you've got huge transaction costs to buy property? Typical, you know, stamp duty and other legal costs and those sorts of things. You've got more maintenance costs and other repair costs. And, you know, very little chance of massive capital appreciation. Even my best case scenario is 5 to 10% higher over the next 3 years. I mean, that's, you know, after inflation is almost nothing. So, yeah, I think the buy versus rent equation has really switched. And I remind you again of what I said earlier on. There's only been twice in the whole history of Australia where prices have really roared away. The first was after the Second World War, where there was a massive rebuild and population growth. And the second was between 1990 and 2020 because of financial deregulation, very low interest rates, massive government support and all of that stuff. Now, they're still trying to keep that Ponzi scheme going by sucking more people into the bottom to sort of support the whole property pyramid. But without capital appreciation, not sure that's going to go. There's 1.2 million spare properties across Australia at the moment, vacant at the moment at least, probably more than that actually. And so we've got oversupply of property, we've got under demand, we've got international investors gone, we've got migrants not coming in. You know, I can give you a whole long list of reasons why, in fact, prices won't rise. So therefore, yeah, maybe renting is the thing to do for a bit. You know, what's to lose, really? And in fact, one of the observations I've got, if you think you're moving to a new area now, probably worth renting there so you can get a feel for the area, get to understand where the best places are and, you know, do it like that rather than actually trying to pick from afar or using the portals. Now, this is interesting. This is from Hong saying, I see a lot of people still spending on shopping and eating out in Liverpool despite mortgage stress in the suburb. Well, I agree. Mortgage stress is not, the thing to understand is mortgage stress does not mean people don't spend, right? It's a cash flow view, money coming in, money going out. They can fill the gap by putting more on credit cards. They can fill the gap by refinancing their mortgage. They can do all sorts of things. They can cut back on other types of spending. It's not like there's a binary spend, don't spend. What it's doing, though, is it's putting a financial pressure on households. And the longer this more negativity in terms of cash flow goes on, the more difficult households will find it in terms of being able to recover. And that's what I keep seeing. I see people getting into financial difficulty, quite often not being aware of their financial position, continuing to spend, getting into more significant difficulty. And it takes perhaps 2 or 3 years for this all to work through. And I've used a couple of times, I haven't got it available tonight, but this picture of head in the sand, right? You know, you just put your head in the sand and just carry on as if nothing was actually going wrong. And if your income is going to rise, then maybe you will be able to escape if you get, you know, high employment. But if with unemployment much higher, with no real income growth likely for any time soon, as far as I can see. It seems to me that people are going to find it very difficult to get out of mortgage stress once they're in. And again, I use my analogy of Western Australia, where we've seen a number of people over a number of years get into difficulty. This grinds through, it grinds on, pulls them further and further into difficulty. And then there's a negative spiral because price of property continue to fall, negative equity continues to get worse, and the whole thing then falls apart. That leads to social issues, that leads to a whole bunch of broader consequences in terms of behaviour and those sorts of things. And that's, I guess, the point I want to come back to, which is that property is not just an economic transaction. Property has consequences. The decisions you take, financially speaking, have social consequences and economic consequences for you and other people too. And I'm concerned that sometimes people get bounced into property, great price, you know, etc., without thinking through the broader consequences. If people get into financial difficulty, it is quite hard. And, you know, the Council of Financial Regulators recommendation about the debt line is dead right. You should reach for help if you are in financial stress, if you are not managing money in, money out very well, then one, draw up a cash flow. The ASIC cash flow tool is a really good one. I recommend it. Two, prioritize. So think about what you can and what you don't have to spend money on. And three, recognize that unless you change your behavior, things don't change. And what I'm finding amazing in my surveys is that people sort of intrinsically quite often know that they've got a financial pressure, but don't do much about it. And unfortunately, it doesn't correct itself. That's the concern I have. And if you look at Ireland, and if you look at the UK and the US, the worst impact of the global financial crisis hit 4 years down the track. 4 years. That was when the default rates hit the highest. That's when prices fell the hardest. So don't assume that this is going to be a quick bounce back, you know, or the budget will suddenly fix everything. I think this is going to be a long, slow grind. So prepare, understand, and drop those cash flows. I do think it's important. Okay, down the road from Harvey Bay, Bundaberg, 4670, says Haley. Okay, 4670. 4670, rush. We're nearly at 9:30. Doesn't time fly when you're looking at postcodes? Okay, 4670. Yep, Bundaberg, yep. 36,000 households, 11,500 in borrowing, 16,600 renting, 12,400 properties for rent, 12,683 rental property owners, property investors. Financial stress, 37%. The stress is sitting at 26%. The rental stress is sitting at 42%. That's 6,911. And the stressed investors are at 31%. And the profile is looking mid-case, down 3.7, down 8.8, down 13.4. And the best case at 4.3, 3.3, and down minus 0.8. Let me just put that up on the screen so that you can see all the information. So 36,000, 37%, 26%, 42%, 31%. And the best case, up 4.3, up 3.3, and down 0.8 over 3 years. So there you go. Hopefully that's helpful. Okay, Russell's asked an interesting question here. What are your thoughts on buying an old house on 330 squares of land in a suburb like Berala, which is 16 k's from the CBD? Also, can you do 2141? Well, you know, houses generally hold their value better than units. But if you've got an old property, then the chances are there's going to be stuff that needs to be done to it. So you need to get a good advice with regard to its structural integrity and maintenance. I'll also make the point that 330 squares doesn't sound huge. 600 squares used to be typical. So is it sort of subdivided, I wonder? Generally, what you find is that property closer into the CBD traditionally has held higher value because of access to the CBD. But with all of these changes with video conferencing, we're seeing something weird happening, and that is less demand closer in, more demand further out, where you get bigger properties, where you've got bigger land blocks, and where you've got more open space. So that's the other question. Is it closed in? Is it less closed in? So I don't think it's as simple as perhaps it was once, is my perspective. And can I do 2141? I sure can. 2141. Okay. So there's Barilla, and you can see there that there are 9,300 households, of which 3,200 are borrowing, 4,500 are renting, 3,400 for rent, and 2,400 rental property owners, 52% in financial stress. There's 32% in mortgage stress, but there's 686 in severe mortgage stress. Now, that's very important. I think we haven't seen that many with severe stress. So this severe number is quite significant. That's people who are deeply in negative cash flow. Defaults around 2%, 67% of renters in stress, and 40% of stressed investors, which is, again, interesting because you've got this severe stressed investors. You haven't seen that much this evening, 686. So that looks like to me to be a postcode in some degree of difficulty, and it's translating into a 9% fall down to 14, down to 16 over the next 3 years. Even the best case scenario is down 1.9, 1.9, and down 4. So it looks to me as though there's some caution required there. And I know that it's close to the Sydney Olympic Park and Homebush, which also means, of course, that it's swamped with a lot of new stuff all round about. So I would be a little cautious. Okay. Boom, boom, boom. Now let's have a look. What else have I missed here? Tom says 3,800 suburbs in Australia. Why not go through them all now? Ah, well, I could do, but if you want the whole set, you have to download it off Patreon. It's available if you want it. Okay, 2131. I'm going to just do a few more, and then I'm going to stop, see whether any other broader questions that I need to answer. Okay, this is 2131, 9,772. This is Ashfield. 2,400 borrowing, 6,000 renting, 4,500 properties for rent, 2,562 investors at 67% in financial stress, 52% in mortgage stress at 716 mild, 547 in severe. Now you can see again that those areas southwest of Sydney are actually where a lot of the issues are. We're seeing that quite consistently. 66% of renters in rental stress, 63% of investors in investor stress. As a result of that, the mid case is for prices to go down 12%, 16%, 19% over the next 3 years in the mid case. Okay. Matthew says, and this is very nice, I started following you about 5 years ago, prepped myself in a way for this recession, cheapest rent I could find, and focus on other things. Thank you for your insights. Well, I appreciate that. I'll tell you what's so interesting. I've had lots of people contact me through the various channels and basically say something similar, that they actually, as a result of what I've been talking about here for the last few years, they've actually taken better decisions, and as a result of the better decisions they've taken, they are actually better prepared for what's going on. That's great. That's the best news that I can have, because that's what this is about. This isn't about running a channel for profit. This is about helping people to get more informed, better informed about what's going on, and making better decisions, because I believe that people have the opportunity to make better decisions than many people do. And unfortunately, with all of the mainstream media and all of the spin that's out there and all of the disinformation that's out there and all of the spruiking that's out there, and you know, there are so many articles. I saw one today claiming that property was about to boom, right? But the arguments to support it were just so weak. So If I've helped, that's great. Even if I've made you think twice and made you test your own assumptions, that's good. I'm not telling anybody what to do. I'm just saying, ask yourself these sorts of questions. You make better decisions. As a result of that, hopefully you'll be in a better place down the track. Now, Nicholas asked, when will be able to access your mortgage stress software? The answer is, a bit more development work to be done. Still, hopefully, you know, soon, within a month or two, watch this space. If you want the data, you can get the data already by going to the Patreon channel. I'll talk about that in a second, and downloading all of the data there. It does cost, because there's a bit of work involved in maintaining it, but it is feasible to get it. But hopefully soon enough, the tool, as you've seen tonight, will be available more broadly. I think it's quite powerful, isn't it? Yes, AZ says, which suburbs will have low rental stress? Is it a short list? Yeah, there are some. They're actually pretty good. I tend to focus on the ones with the bigger issues rather than the ones with the lower issues. Perhaps I should do a post, actually. It's an interesting thought. Down the track, I might do a post as to where are the best places to go with the least stress. Good idea. By next March, mortgage deferrals finally come to an end, right? Says gold, silver, cryptos. Probably, unless they extend it. They'll probably extend it again. I wouldn't be surprised if they extend it through beyond the election. That would be my expectation. Kelly says, you've really helped others a lot, including me. You really give me insights to have a look in detail and true side of this industry. Great. That's success. Tick. That's what I like to hear. That's indeed what I'm trying to do here. how much does it cost to own a TV channel? So it's a truth seeker. Yeah, what, you mean a terrestrial one? I wouldn't go there now, I think, just use the online one. I mean, you know, this is some... invested a bit to make this work, but I'm not sure I want an air. The key point, of course, is a lot of the media channels own real estate channels and own real estate portals. A domain, guess who's connected with that? Channel 9, realestate.com.au, that's News Corp. So in a way, anything that's on those channels when they're talking information about property should have a disclaimer, right? And there should be a cross disclaimer between the portals and the news channels, but no, there isn't. So that's a real issue for me in terms of, you cannot be convinced. I'm not convinced that it's completely objective and independent. I can't see how it can be. And they've put a lot of money in, and they're trying to corral more and more of the information to make it less and less easily available. Used to, years ago, be able to get all the settlement data for every state. It's harder and harder to do that now. You can for some, but not all. That's because those property portals and other information providers have corralled that information and basically packaged it up and now sell it and charge for it. Disgraceful, in my view. Right, we're running over time now. Just, I wanted a couple of other questions. Julian Smith says, your core thesis has been lending drives prices. If the responsible lending standards repealed in April 2021, will they go up? Possibly, yeah. So the question is, over the last 6 months, banks have actually opened the spigot on their lending standards again. So after the Royal Commission, it was very tight, they opened it up. Now what they're doing is doing a lot more analysis, but they're not necessarily not lending. So there are very few people that I've seen now who can't get the mortgage if they want it. So it's going to be an interesting question to see whether the changes to responsible lending opens more people to borrow, or whether they'll get bigger mortgages, or whether in fact it's already there. The lower interest rates has already worked, and the banks reduced their multiples and things previously. So my own reading is we'll have a small impact, but I don't think it'll be as massive as many people, particularly in the real estate industry, surprise, surprise, have been spooking. Okay. Now, Adiz says, what's the chances of government paying unpaid rent to the landlords affected by rental moratorium to save the property market? Yeah, could well. Anything's feasible, right? At the moment, you know, a lot of property investors are really under the gun. They are still on holiday repayments at the moment with the banks. That won't go on forever. What do they do? Do they sell? Do they get out? If they sell and get out, do they lose money? Win? It's a big question. It could well be a big issue later. We'll see. So very good. Okay, let me just make sure. I think I've pretty much... I may have missed a few people. If I have, in terms of apologies for not doing your postcode. As I say, if you want to get postcode data, what you can do is just send me a message via my DFA blog. And if you use the contact there, what you can do is get that sent to me. I'll turn it around, send it back to you. Just a few closing thoughts now as we move towards the end of the show. Firstly, if you want more information, the DFA blog is there, digitalfinanceanalytics.com/blog. You can get all the related information, a whole bunch of other stuff, and you can contact me using the little app down on the blog site, so send me a message that way. You can also support our work via Patreon. There are various levels of membership, from just contributing a little bit each month to help me with the channel, through to, for example, the mortgage stress data, which I'll touch on in a second, through to, in fact, getting the complete data set. That is available too, various tiers. And people come and go. You know, some people supported me for years, other people come for a few months, but whatever, it all helps. It really is appreciated. And the $50 a month tier allows you to get access to the mortgage stress data, which is precisely what we've been using tonight. It's in Excel format. You can get the data for all postcodes across Australia. And the thing about that is that sometimes people want just a month, so that you can sign up for a month and then cancel it, or you can sign up and continue to get it each month for as long as you're at that tier. And I'll be sending the data out tomorrow for everybody who is signed up to that particular tier. I've had a few people ask about it. It takes about a week after the end of the month to get all the data complete. I'll be sending it out tomorrow to everybody on the Patreon channel who's signed up for the $50 month tier. That's that one. We also should mention the DFA one-on-one. So I'm still doing these one-on-one conversations. If you want an individual conversation with me about a postcode, I don't give financial advice, but I can tell you about a particular postcode. It's one postcode, not multiple postcodes. I can look at the data, I can assemble the trends and all the other stuff that we've been touching on tonight in more detail. I can go through my price scenarios, and we can book a time, about an hour, up to an hour, maybe it's half an hour normally, somewhere like that. It's $250 plus GST, payable in advance, and if you're interested, contact me again via the blog. Spaces are limited, bookings are around 2 to 3 weeks out at the moment, simply because I've got so many people that I'm servicing through this channel. But I find this a very good conversation. People can ask me anything they like as well about the property market and stuff, but again, not financial advice. So that's available there. Or you can support me via PayPal just by making a contribution. The link is there. Or indeed Bitcoin, if people want to do that. And there's also merch as well, which some people like, some people don't, but it's there if you want to use it. Now, next time, next week, there's a live Q&A, and the title is Digital the Answer to Money Printing? So we're going to talk about crypto and whether, in fact, crypto has got a stronger future now with all of this QE, with all this negative interest rate stuff. And I'll have Alex Saunders from Nugget News on with me to discuss all of that. I think it will be a very interesting show. So if you would like to mark your diaries, it's this time next week, and hopefully there won't be another budget running across, so just to make it easier. All right, so I think I'm pretty much done. I want to say thank you very much for spending so long with me this evening, and it's really great to have you on board. Thank you very much to those who stay with me to the end. Great to see so many still on. It's tremendous. And I do appreciate your comments and questions. If there are topics you'd like me to cover, then feel free to send me a message, again, via the blog, or leave a comment in the YouTube channel. I do read them all. I don't necessarily comment on all of them these days. There are too many, but I do actually take very strong interest in what people say, and I do actually change my strategies and indeed my content based on the feedback. So do give me feedback if you like. So I want to say thank you very much for this evening. Appreciate your time. Appreciate all the comments, all the conversations. Thank you for all those who've supported me and the Super Chat tonight as well. been tremendous to have you on board. I look forward to seeing you next week. And meantime, check back tomorrow. We'll be putting more videos up for the rest of the week on property and finance-related information. It's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics saying thank you very much. Signing off. See you next time.